Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source. I'm your host, Jace. I got a chance last weekend while I was in Anaheim to talk to the cast, some of the cast members of Resident Alien, along with the creator of the show, executive producer Chris Sheridan, Sarah Tomko, who plays Asta on the show, as well as Craig Reynolds, who plays Sheriff Mike, were also there. Unfortunately, Alan Tudyk was unable to make it, and Alice Wetterlund got sick at the last minute. So it was good in a way that the others weren't able to make it because we got to do one-on-one with each of the three people that were there. You can really tell that they're very much a family, and they really have a lot of passion for the show. So it was great to talk to them. I know normally I don't cover movie and TV stuff, as you all know, but this is based on a comic. It's a comic I really enjoy, the Dark Horse book. Resident Alien, which has a lot more of a procedural feel, you know, a little bit more of mystery and just that feel of, you know, like a Law and Order or a CSI or something like that. It doesn't have the humor that that the show does. And we talked to Chris Sheridan about that. So it was interesting to hear what he had to say. Sarah Tomko, who plays Asta, she had a lot to say as well about the differences for her and her character, very different. So that was really interesting to hear. And then Craig Reynolds, Sheriff Mike, you know, one of the things I loved, you'll hear him talk about how in a show with aliens, he's kind of the weirdest one, right? With the crazy stuff that he says. So again, it was a pleasure to talk to all of them. If you haven't seen the show, I do recommend it. I don't watch a lot of television. I don't have time when people are reading comics, which is fantastic. But this is a show that I do enjoy. I'm a big Alan Tudyk fan, all the way back in Con Man days. And yeah, I do recommend checking out the show. It's wildly hilarious. It's a lot of fun. And hopefully we'll hear about a new season 4 coming soon because we just had the season 3 finale. So anyway, hope you enjoy these quick chats with the showrunner and the two cast members of Resident Alien, and we appreciate your support and you join us as always. We'll talk to you next time.
Well, Chris, I'd like to start by asking about the source material of the comic. The show has a much more lighthearted tone.
Yeah.
You know, still leaning into the mystery, obviously still the fish out of water. But can you talk a little bit about discovering the comic as an IP and then wanting to adapt it and how those changes came about?
Yeah, it's a great question. I got the IP in October of 2015 from Amblin, sent it to me because I knew those guys and we were looking to do something together. And they sent me the comic and I fell in love with it immediately. I thought it was such a great slice of life and a great way to explore the human condition by having an alien come down and sort of seeing what's up. So I told them I'd do it, and then I spent the next 9 or 10 months working on it, trying to figure out what the show would be and what the pitch would be. And it was, you know, the show ended up being a lot, in many ways, different than the comic. But I also wanted to sort of keep the soul of the comic, because I think Peter Hogan and Steve Parkhouse did such an amazing job with that comic, and I'm a huge fan of it. So I was a little bit terrified to let them down. But I knew that there were some changes I needed to make because it's just a different genre. So one of the biggest changes visually that I made was in the comic, you see Harry as an alien. And you just assume that everyone in that world sees him as a human. But as a viewer, you see him as an alien. And I had explored that as a possibility, but for two reasons. One is it would be very, very expensive to have someone in that, you know, in the mask every day. And also in TV, you don't really connect with characters as well if they're in a mask like that than if they're human beings. So I made that decision and then was immediately terrified that Peter Hogan and Steve Parkhouse would hate me for it. But they ultimately understood. So that was part of it. And the other big move I made was to make the alien who comes down here, who takes over the body of Harry VanderSpiegel, a little more evil in the beginning, and with a plan to kill everybody, which was not in the comic. Mm-hmm. And I did that so that he would have some place to go emotionally, you know, wanting to bring him in, wanting him to sort of learn what it's like to be human and slowly get these human emotions, which I added as well, where he gets to a place where he starts to possibly understand what these people are like and maybe not the monsters that he thought they were when he came down. And I thought that would be a really nice way to have a story like this and also lend a little hope to it and a little positivity to it where we're watching this alien start to realize that maybe humans are worth saving as opposed to worthy of killing. So there was definitely some changes I made, but I tried to keep the soul of the show intact. And I think we're managing. It's a different thing, but it still feels there's some similarities. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Did you know right away, once you cast Alan, that you would lean into the humor as well? Did that factor into casting him?
It did factor into casting. The script was already written at that point, and it was already funny. But I needed someone who would not only be funny, but also have a humanity to them. And we saw a lot of actors, a lot of great actors. But Alan was the first one who came in where we saw him, myself and David Dobkin, who's the director of the pilot, and just felt like, it just felt like a perfect fit. And that what he was doing was different than what everyone else was doing with the character. He was very funny, but he also felt like he didn't belong in his body, which I didn't know if that was just the guy or whatever, you know. But getting to know him, I was like, no, he's just a smart actor. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. Everything is a deliberate choice with Alan. There's no mistakes. He's not guessing. He has a plan going in, and he knows what he needs to do to get what he wants as an actor. And he's so incredibly good at it. I was just talking to someone else about how even when we're on set and we're about to shoot and he's Alan and we're talking to him, as soon as they say that the film's rolling, he just transforms into somebody else without even doing anything. He looks like a different person from his energy alone. It's really incredible to watch, and we got so lucky getting him. Incredible. Because he makes the comedy stuff funnier, and he makes the emotional stuff more emotional. He's just fantastic. Yeah.
3 seasons in, it really seems like you've built a real good community of fans.
Yeah.
What's been your best like fan experience or Resident Alien viewer? Anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there's been a few of them where people have reached out, and we just got one the other day that Corey sent this thread that was thread that we're on, this text message thread where someone had posted how a scene from the show, which was a scene in episode 6 of season 2, where Sheriff Mike's character finally admits to Deputy Liv what happened to him and that he lost his partner. It was a very emotional scene. And this woman had posted this thing about how watching that scene felt so authentic and so real, it helped her get through her own PTSD and her own problems that she's been having because she really felt what Mike was feeling and it felt so real to her. So anytime we get anything like that, and we do get a bunch of them, we get people writing saying, I've had such a bad year, or I'm so upset, you know, all the time, but I look forward to Wednesday and I laugh, it makes my life better. Those are the reasons you do it. And then those are the things that make you so happy about what you're doing, and you know, when the work is hard and you're up all night, it makes it feel worthwhile. So there's been some great fan interactions. People who watch the show really love the show, and now that it's, you know, it's on Netflix now and a bigger audience, we're seeing a difference. A lot of the when I hear from the cast, they're starting to get recognized more, and people coming up to them. I love hearing that. It makes them excited about being on the show, and yeah, it's yeah, we love our fans, and we've been in a bubble for so long because COVID and everything was shut down, and we didn't have the chance to have a red carpet when we premiered and all this stuff. So it's nice now coming out on the other end of it to be able to do things like this and to be in person. And to finally have a situation where you can have panels and interact with the fans a little bit and hear what they say about the show. It's we're lucky to still be on the air, as you know, at this point. So.
Yeah, really, lightning in a bottle with the cast that you put together, not just Alan, but
yeah.
It does really seem like it's a family. Y'all are having fun making it, so that comes across. We have fun watching it. So can you talk a little bit about that?
It's true, and the whole cast says the same thing, that it never worked on a show before where everyone gets along as well as we all get along. And I think some of that is because we were in a bubble for a while, and we've been on this, you know, it's also stretched out between COVID, between the strike, and between network schedules. We shot the pilot in 2018, so we're on season 3, but we've been doing this for 6 years. And in the long time in between seasons, the cast is all best friends. So everyone hangs out, everyone is supportive. There's never a sense on set where, you know, you're just hoping someone fails because it'll make you feel better. Everyone is holding each other up and helping each other. It's incredible to see. It makes it so much. It's so hard anyway to do it that if you can do it with your friends and everyone trusts each other, I trust them as a writer. I can talk to them about the characters and open up to them, like, what do you think about this? Does it make sense to you? And they feel comfortable enough to me to say, I read this in the script and it doesn't feel right to me. And can we talk about it? And I'll sit down and talk about it. And oftentimes, usually they're right and I'll adjust the script accordingly. So there's a lot of trust there. And a lot of that comes from the fact that everyone really loves each other and we're all great friends. So it's really a lucky experience.
Yeah,
love it.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
So I have to ask, your character is so much kind of the emotional heart of the show.
Thank you.
Any kind of pressure as kind of that emotional barometer? Do you feel that, or is working with the cast and the script that Chris gives you just make it kind of natural?
That's a great question. Pressure. You know, I don't think I realized when I signed on how much of a straight man I was going to be in a comedy. You know, how much I was going to be the sort of isolated person in the room compared to the rest of the cast and the rest of the storyline. Especially in season one, dealing with sort of the abusive relationship and the shame and the grief, it was very dark compared to everything else that was going on comedically. So I wouldn't say pressure so much as... we have an amazing family and amazing chemistry as a cast, but I definitely felt misunderstood because I wasn't, like, everyone would come to set prepared a very different way than I need to prepare, and so I would have to kind of go into a corner and Blair Witch my emotions out, and, you know, and then just tap me on the shoulder when you're ready, you know, because I'll be... So it felt a little... it just felt a little... Isolating is too harsh of a word because, again, we have such a good family and chemistry together that we have so much fun, but it did feel a little lonely at times, you know, where it was like, oh, I can't make any jokes right now. I need to go and, like, be in this sad, shameful place. So it felt a little like, I want to have fun, you know, like, on certain days, but... Now that she has healed from that a lot, she's gotten into season three where she's a lot more lighthearted. She gets to make a joke. She gets to flirt a little bit. You know, it's a very different Austin than we saw in season one, and it's that is more pressure. Actually, I know how to do season one and season two. I feel a little bit more pressure to, like, be funny. You know, even though that's not how you approach comedy. You don't want to, that's the worst thing you can put on yourself. But there were days that I was like, oh God, I'm surrounded by these comedians. I better be funny, you know? And I think it's just best if you're truthful, no matter what genre you're playing, you know? So I tried to just lean into that.
Does improv play a part at all in you guys'
process? Oh, yeah. We always get one for the page. You know, definitely, like, the way it's written. Our writing team has worked so hard. Let's just, like, do it as is. But our directors and our showrunner are so great about, like, okay, now one for you. Like, whatever you want to do, have fun with it. And more often than not, those moments happen in the show, and we're always surprised by it. We're like, oh, they chose that. And I get those, too, every once in a while, where I'll pitch a line or I'll pitch something. I've even pitched things that I think... Harry should say, and that'll end up in it, and I'll be like, oh wow, they did my idea, you know. I'm always so flattered, but, like, we have such a great team, you don't really need it a lot. It just, because it's improv in the moment, there are these great organic things you can't repeat, you know, so it's wonderful to catch it, and when it works, it works. Yeah.
It really does seem like a show with very complex characters. They're so human, you know, even though Harry's an alien.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their journey and their stuff. Where did you connect with Asta? Like, when you first were auditioning for the role, where did you go, okay, this is what I have in common, this is how I'm going to connect with her as a character?
That's a good question, too. I really connected with her defensiveness first. I definitely have that as a... I won't say weakness, but something that I have definitely worked on in my life is being defensive. I think as a woman in the world, it's hard when you are constantly competing with males in different industries. And so there is a defensiveness, I think, that happens for a lot of women, especially in your work because you're trying to defend who you are and that you deserve to have a seat at the table. So in that sense, I totally understood where Asta was coming from, and I didn't have to put anything on that. But it's funny, I think a lot of people think that I am very much like her, and she's so much more conservative than me. I don't know if you can see at home, but I'm in the most colorful outfit, and like Asta would never wear this outfit. Like I'm much more of a hippie, cold plunge in the river, foresty, like nymph type of girl. You know, I like thrift store shopping, and Asta is just much more. More like she likes things a very clean cut kind of way, so we differ there in that sense. Like I don't really wear jeans, I don't wear leather, it's very like tight clothing. But that's been something too that's evolved over the seasons, that it's been nice to see her breathe a little bit into like colors and different materials, and that has been definitely part of my influence. But in general, I just think the thing that I really love about her is how much of a caretaker she is, and that is something I really understand. I had three brothers growing up, big family. I've always been the peacekeeper in my family, and I'm always the friend that people seem to call up and ask advice to. So that felt pretty natural for her too. At the same time, it's natural to be wondering, like, what do I do when I don't have that? You know, like, I've definitely been there too. So. She's great that way.
Yeah, and your chemistry with Alice is something, you know, Darcy on the show, Asta, yeah. Darcy, best friends. Talk a little bit about that working relationship. I mean, are you guys just really close, offset as well? Because you really spark off each other so wonderfully on the show.
Yeah, we do. We have sort of a yin-yang thing happening where she is sort of, when she's cold, I'm hot. When I'm cold, she's hot. You know, I mean, we take turns, but we really are like a puzzle piece that fit really well together. I liken it to this relationship I had in middle school and high school with a girlfriend of mine. We had just completely opposite ways of viewing the world, opposite friends, opposite way we dressed, but we just connected because she asked me to sit next to her on the bus, and it was like we just needed someone to be, you know, in the sixth grade. And I feel like that's what Darcy and I, that's why we bonded over time, and that's what we're like, and it's just made us always be sort of opposites that attract. And turned into this really great, yeah, there's great chemistry for us. Like, it feels a bit like the Odd Couple, but where there's a little bickering there, but mostly just complete trust in another human being. And it's so fun. She and I have the best time on set together. We're really close now as human beings, and we just kind of get each other. But we are different. Even in real life, we're very different. So it's like, we don't have to try that hard. We just kind of puts our truth into it, and we lean on each other, and it's really, I love scenes with her because it's just a safe space and we don't have to put anything on it, you know? It just is like, oh, it's just us in our living room.
Well, I mean, that's what's great about your friends, right? They call you on your crap. They don't let you get away with it. And I'm sure when you're working with Alice, it's kind of, like you said, it's safe and it just works.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to bring the best out of you and you're bringing
and
the best
out of
her.
And I can say to her, like, you have to be careful not to ask too much advice of other actors, because then there's room for like them telling you how to do things. But I think it's nice when you feel a bit insecure maybe and you say, hey, how did that look or how did that sound? And you know that the person is telling you the truth. Like, they're going to be like, I think that we can do it better, you know? Like, and that doesn't happen very often because we're usually, but it's like, it's at least I know that that's there. If I'm like, I really need you to tell me if it's working or not, and you know, we can do that for each other. It's really nice to have that, because you just don't know half the time what it looks like.
When it comes to, because I know you guys can kind of give little input here and there on, you know, the writing and whatnot, or you try to, do you find that a lot of times that kind of breaks into a lot of shenanigans? Do a lot of things happen on set where you're like, it just kind of goes off the rails a little bit? Or
especially when we're all together. Yeah, we don't get to do it very often, but for Harry's birthday party, and then for that scene we saw last episode where we were all attacking him, you know?
Yeah.
There's always somebody making a joke and putting it in, and there's, okay, can we quiet down now? And say, yes, okay, and focus, but no, and then someone makes a fart joke, and like, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, there's always that happening, but it is so fun, and I'm so grateful, and I just think I wish everybody could see the behind the scenes.
Maybe we should film that.
Yeah, I think we will.
Yeah. Hello, 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 Jace, Isola, Jessica. All right, let's do it.
All right, Sheriff Mike here.
Yep.
I got to tell you, my absolute favorite scene from all three seasons is The Wind Beneath My Wings. Voice, amazing. Was that you?
That's me. Yeah, singing? Man. I was on Broadway. I was nominated for a Tony.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, it was kind of tough because it was 6:30 in the morning. And, you know, not everybody's vocally warm by then. But, you know, we went back in the booth and did some re-recording, and that was better. So, yeah. Yeah, it's a real thing. I wasn't sure that was going to work at first. I remember when Chris was talking to me about it. I was like, really? Carrie? He was like, trust me. And then he was right. It worked just perfect. So, yeah.
Is that one of your favorite moments, or do you have a favorite Sheriff Mike moment?
Favorite Sheriff Mike moment. Oh, gosh. There's so many, man. I love the when we were interrogating in season one, the guy that plays Asta's former husband. And I say to them, you know, I hate to interrupt this little stroll down who gives a shit lane. You know what I mean? Which was an improv. I don't know, man. I like the foot scene with Levi, with Mayor Ben. I don't know. There's very little I don't love about this show and this character. I mean, I can't think of anything I don't love. It's my favorite character I've ever played.
He seems to be surprisingly the most quirky. I mean, he just says the most off the
wall. It is weird that in a show, I've had people tell me in a show that features all of this alien sci-fi stuff that he's the weirdest character. And I've had some people theorize that he's an alien. And I don't think that's the case. I haven't heard anything like that. But I love Mike. I love growing up, Leslie Nielsen was one of my favorite kind of actors. And I love that whole spoof. You know, Airplane, Naked Gun. I imbue some of that because there's this whole aspect of Mike saying the most ridiculous things with a straight face, like with just this last episode that aired when he's, you know, shunning her about talking about aliens. And he's like, "No, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go look for a top secret invisible military claw chopper tracks." You know what I mean? Which, of course, is just absurd. But in his mind, you know, it's not absurd to him. So, yeah. Mike's an odd duck.
Yeah, and Chris mentioned that I was asking about kind of fan reaction and fan moments, and he mentioned, and this is something else with Sheriff Mike, that the complexity of emotion, losing his partner. You mentioned that a fan reached out.
Yeah, we did. We just recently, actually, I was on Threads, which is, you know, the new X, which was the old Twitter. I don't know what the hell is happening. But it was a person on there who commented on how the episode when we were discussing grief, that they brought it up with their grief counselor and actually, like, showed their grief counselor the scene and how the grief counselor and this individual were really kind of blown away with how it was the first time I heard a character speak exactly what they were feeling. And I had a large part, I wrote a significant portion of that scene, you know, myself. And, you know, trying to find a way that speaks earnestly about things. And it was also really important to ground Mike. You know, I think it's a lot easier to tolerate Mike if you know what's behind how he is. And we knew that, you know, with Mike, we couldn't do 3-4 seasons of him just being an abusive piece of shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Funny as it might be, to some, eventually people are like, I am so fucking sick of this guy. You know what I mean? So we had to find a way to give the audience permission to enjoy him. And I think Liz Bowen, deputy Liv on the show, I think she's real conduit to that. If she accepts Mike, I think it gives the audience permission to accept Mike. And I love Liz. She's just the best. We've had incredible chemistry from the first moment we sat down beside each other at the table read. It was just fantastic. So I look forward to many, many, many more seasons with her, hopefully. So.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, you know, he comes across as that badass, you know, big black.
I've had people ask me, what's up with the big black thing? And I'm like, I think it's a control thing for him.
Yeah.
I think what he likes to do instantly is see if I can dominate you.
Yeah.
And getting you to address me the way that I want you to address me is my way of going, I'm the boss of you. And so how Mayor Ben undercuts his efforts every time, you know, it's really funny. He's like, I'm not comfortable with that. But then when we had the doctor, geez, the good-looking doctor.
Dr. Ethan.
Yes, Dr. Ethan. And I introduced myself, and he was like, nice to meet you, Big Black. And he's like, finally, someone who gets it. You know what I mean? I love him. I wanted to do something different, too. I'd never seen a black character like Mike before on television. You know what I mean? I really wanted to break some molds, you know, redefine things, and redefine things for myself as an actor as well. So,
we know he's got a heart of gold, though. That comes through in what you do, what you bring to the character. That even though he's got this rough exterior, we know deep down how much he cares about Deputy Blue, how much he cares about his father, how much he cares about really the whole patient's
community.
He's
had a lot of loss. I mean, I think, you know, the story that we've created for Mike, he lost his mom early on. He lost his best friend and partner. Loss and grief, it changes you. And I think, you know, for some people, it changes them in a way that they never want to have that feeling again. And they do everything they can to wall off that aspect of themselves. And, you know, as life goes on and you have what I would consider to be like these quakes that happen in your life, and then that wall that you're walling off starts to crack and fall down, and then all of that pain that you've been trying to keep away slowly seeps its way back into your experience and your journey. And I think it was important for him to find a way to, what's the word I'm looking for, to unplug that pain, you know. And I think finding his way to be vulnerable with Liv, I think that freed him up a little bit. Kind of like reminds me of the line that Harry says to Asta when she asked him, why didn't you know, when I found out you were an alien, why didn't you erase my memory? And he's like, because I'm not alone anymore. And I think, you know, that's what Mike needed to feel with Liv. He needed to feel that he wasn't alone. And she gives him that. And I think he's trying to give that back to her now, which is why they went after her grandma. That didn't go so well. I mean, well for Liz, but not so well for her grandma. Yeah.
Was that something when you were exploring the character, first auditioning, knew you were going to take on the role? Was that all that complexity? Was that something that came to you right away? Or has it been throughout the process?
Dude, I got Mike right away. Interestingly enough, man, when I went to the audition, you know, you're in this town long enough, you know people. You're sitting at auditions, you see the same people. You know what category you're in, right? And I'm sitting there, and I'm listening to all these guys that kind of know. And I'm listening to what they're reading, and I'm listening to how they're reading. And they're just kind of like reading the lines, you know what I mean? I'm like, wow, so either I'm way the fuck off in what I'm thinking, or they're just not, you know, seeing it the way that I am. And I just went in there, I swung for the fences, and we did a little improv in the room with Chris and our director at the time, David Dopkin, and it just clicked. It clicked. I loved this script from the moment I read it. As a matter of fact, I showed Chris a text after I got the part. I had sent a text to a friend of mine talking about how, oh, I just read this pilot. Resident Alien is like the best pilot I've ever read, you know. And he was like, oh, you better book it. And I was like, I won't. And then I listed did this whole journey of emojis of like the happy face, sad face, frustrated face, angry face, pissed off face. And then went through this whole litany of like my journey. And then when I ended up booking the role, I screenshotted it and I sent it to Chris. And he was like, you were so wrong. You did get it. You know what I mean? But it's true. I didn't, you know, in the pilot, you know, he was listed stepping down out of the truck into the snow. It was like his burly muscles rippling. And I was like, oh, I left my muscles at home. I don't know about that part. But then once I got the part and we were at the table read, the burly muscles part wasn't in the script either. So it just goes to show you that when you're right, the script changes for you. And so I'm grateful for that. Still looking for the muscles.
And it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks.